Welcome to the Round 19 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Bit of a better week for me.
I thought I was going to do quite well, and then the Brisbane game rolled along, and I'm sure you'll be disappointed as an Essendon supporter, but you had quite great Supercoach results, at least. Ended up pipping me by a fair bit. This week's show, Mark, it's a little bit quieter around the traps, and I think we had a little bit of controversy on social media pipes on Twitter erupt about the guy leading the competition at the moment. That seems to be dominating the Supercoach conversation a little bit this week, so speaks a little bit about the fact that there really isn't too much to talk about trades-wise in Supercoach.
Got to say, that's a huge relief, to be honest. Having Barlow and Aaron Hall and Deledio and Ablett and Dalhouse and Nick, now just so many injuries and getting through the buys, and my prayers of saying, please give me 2 or 3 weeks without trading, please.
They seem to be happening when team sheets get dropped as well.
Yeah, like last week, so shattering. I've had premium sitting on my pine for the last few weeks. It's been driving me crazy. Going into team sheets, I'm like, oh yeah, I might not be so bad. Deledio will be the only one missing. And then Hall and McVay drop at the last minute.
And Hall for an extended period as well. Hopefully McVay we get back this week. So why don't we just launch into the personal update? How did you actually score this weekend?
You made a good point, mate. My team was going pretty crap until the Sunday when I gambled on Rockcliffe captain. I guess Deledio being out allowed me to do that, use the loophole. And Rocky just went completely nuts. And Steph Martin. I was shattered to see Gorn score so well again, and then Steph actually beat him this week, which is crazy. The last 2 weeks, I swear, Gorn has been on 65 with 5 minutes left in the third quarter and then posted a 130. Like, I have no idea how he's doubling his score that quickly, but I guess the old adage that the Giants don't get smaller as the game goes on might be true with that one. Dan Hannabury, what the F, that's cost me 100 points in a couple of weeks, like posts his 2 lowest scores of the season. Very painful. Good to have Bartel back, 130. New recruit Zorko, 113, was great. And Petrarca coming off the bench for 101 was very good. I also ended up bringing in Buddy Franklin last week. So he was theoretically going to be my 7th premium forward and cover like a Deledio Hall sort of situation, and now Deledio seems like he's out for a bit longer, so I guess I'm back to 6 premium forwards, and Buddy's one of them. And I scored 24-33 and moved up a little bit in the rankings to 535.
So I scored 23-27. I dropped a little bit down to 894th. Back out to about 150 points behind you, Mark. Relatively disappointing week with some premiums. Lee Montagna scoring 65. Franklin, I also traded him in for Hall, Mark. He only scored 86. I took Petrarca's 101 ahead of Wingard's 64, so I kept Wingard on the bench. So really the Franklin trade only netted me the difference between Franklin and Wingard, which was quite disappointing in the end. I also had Collins on field for McVay, score 78, Rory Laird 71. I didn't have any particularly big scores either. Premiums scored around the 100 mark, like Bontempelli 109, Gray 109. Didn't have the massive 150 type Rockcliffe scores.
I think it's really hard to actually put out those big scores when you do have premiums sitting on the bench, especially like there's not a lot of our bench players. I know Petrarca did well on the weekend, but there's not a lot of bench players scoring really well. So when you have a few weeks of those guys sitting on the bench, it can be very painful. And I mean, some teams, there's so much luck at this time of year. Some teams are just avoiding all of the carnage.
In terms of a group update, it does seem like overall our community did a lot better than the both of us, Mark. 25-80 was the top score, and that was Jesse's, JT's, All-Stars. And that pushed Jesse up to 291st. So congratulations to you. I believe that's Jester on the Supercoach Coach forums.
Yeah, it's very active.
There were actually 8 people in our Supercoach groups who scored 2,550 or higher. So quite a few people barely missing out on a shout out. Well done to, all the 2,500 plus scores. There appears to be quite a lot of you because our Supercoach leagues moved upwards as well, Mark.
They did. Number one.
We're very, very happy to see that. An average of 24.04 for the round, and our Supercoach Coach Aces rocketed into first. Extremely happy about that. And out of the leagues that have 18 members, we have first, third, and fourth at the moment, Mark. So very happy about that.
Very nice. It's starting to feel like a bit of a grind, mate. 5 weeks to go. I'm just trying to hold on.
Yeah, well, we've been first with 5 weeks to go for the last couple of years. And
I think we've been first with 1 round to go the last couple of years.
We've even given up on crossing our fingers. We're just like, if it happens, it happens. So hopefully it happens, Mark. All right, in terms of what we're going to cover this week, we've just plucked a few questions from social media, and we'll start off with the injury questions, but there's no specific theme. As mentioned at the opening of this week's show, there's not a lot to discuss at the moment, and next week we'll probably gear up in terms of discussing finals players, Mark, but for this week we'll probably just have a shorter show. All right, first question here is from Ben Hodgson. He has one trade left, and he's considering trading out Brett Dilidio. So we were hopeful last week that Dilidio would be back for the game on the weekend. He hasn't come back, and in this week's news cycle it's been released that Dilidio is out for an indefinite period, which you mentioned at the top of the show, Mark. So with one trade left, I think we'd very much recommend holding, Mark, but if you had a slightly healthier amount of trades, would you consider trading out Brett Dilidio?
So personally, I have Dilidio and I'm looking to hold him this week. I just think that my last few trades should be used for donuts. If I can cover with someone like Petrarca, then I should just do that, because the donuts are going to be more painful later in the year, I think, with 5 weeks to go. If you've got four or five trades, especially five, I'd definitely be trading him out. But if you're sort of into that lower category, I think that, especially with finals coming up and with so much carnage already, I think those trades are going to be needed later in the season and are going to be more useful than side-swapping Dilidio. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I agree with that. And Ben actually has said here that Dilidio is actually his seventh forward, so he already has six premium forwards. In that situation, obviously, you're even less likely to trade out Dilidio, right? You have one trade left. You already have six premiums. Trading Dilidio might not actually net you any points on field.
Well, I guess that's almost the situation that I am in, except I have Hall on the bench as well, because I do have the seventh premium forward. And yeah, I think that that's definitely even more of a reason just to hold off. And look, if you have one or two trades left with 2 weeks to go, maybe think of a non-donut trade. But even then, I'd be saving him for the last week. Just use him to avoid donuts at this stage.
I'd agree with that, Mark. And I think even if I had five trades, you were saying if you had five trades, you might consider trading Dilidio. If I had five trades and seven premium forwards, I'd just hold Dilidio. Like, you already have six premium forwards. I don't care how many trades I have. Six is all I need.
Yeah, and then you trade him when you need to.
Yeah. For example, if you have Hanabry missing games, instead of trading Hanabry out, you might trade Dilidio out in your midfield to another premium midfielder. I think just keeping that trade up your sleeve and keeping that flexibility makes sense if you're already fully stocked. And overall, I agree with you, Mark. General strategy is trade for donuts. And if you have more than four trades, like you were saying, you'd consider trading to bring a premium on field or trading to cover an injury. But if you have less than four, definitely just hold on. We still have 5 weeks to go.
I've heard a couple of people ask questions about, with five trades left, they should be even double trading to get someone like a gun into their team. As a good friend of ours, Hondo, recommends, that is something that's just likely to backfire terribly. You could double trade into someone that performs poorly, and unless you've got more than eight trades left, definitely do not be upgrading at this stage, I'd say.
And double trading is very dangerous at this point in the season, because if you think about it, when you double trade, you're essentially putting the value of two trades into your one upgrade, and you need that one upgrade to pay off over X number of weeks. The less weeks you have to go, the less opportunity you have for those two trades to deliver you value through one single player. At this point in the season, you're much better off using the two trades for two side swaps than you are investing the two trades to upgrade one player who's only going to be an upgrade for, you know, 5 weeks. So you get a 110 scorer instead of a 80 scorer if you have a carriage on field for 5 weeks. As a best case scenario, that's 150 points with two trades.
Not even close to worth it when, if you cop two donuts, that's easy, that 150 points made up.
Yeah, so very much agree with that. Avoid double trading or upgrade downgrading at this point in the season. It's very, very fraught with danger. Almost certainly will backfire.
I guess the best situation is you go into next week in the finals and you have eight trades left. I guess that's the perfect plan, and you use two every week.
All right, next question here is about Lukey Dalhouse. We have had a few people ask about Luke and whether or not he should be brought back into the Supercoach sides, because there's talk that they'll regain Lukey Dalhouse this week, yeah. Which the Dogs are very excited about after their horrendous
run. Oh, that was run. So sad.
Mm. For people considering Dalhouse, his last score when he went down injured was a 29 in round 12. So
thanks for the reminding me, mate. Brought him in that week. Great.
So his prices are 477,000, which is affordable for a top six forward, very affordable. But at the same time, he has a break even of 196. If Dalhouse was in this week, would you wait for him to regain some form, or would you be confident bringing him in at that price? Or even if you could bring him in, would you want to see another price drop with his massive break even? How do you view Luke Dalhouse?
I was listening to Dermy talk about it on SEN on the weekend, and he was just saying that you shouldn't put too much expectation on someone that has been injured and out for 5 weeks to come back and perform at their top capability straight away, and that you should expect that maybe they're going to need to build into some form and build into some confidence with their body. And I think that's really good advice. I know that Dalhouse is a gun, but he is the sort of player that you could, the Dogs especially, could ease into the game in maybe a slightly different role than he might normally play, and not push him so much through the midfield. And so I really think that you'd want to see at least a game out of him. And then often it's a second game that hurts even more, and they struggle through that second game. So really you'd want to bring him in on the third game that he'd been playing. So I think my advice on Dalhouse is, he's definitely got the upside. I can see why people are talking about bringing him in. I'd be pretty reluctant to bring him in this week. I'd want to see at least one game out of him, get that price, decrease, save that little bit of money, and just make sure that he's going to be able to play properly and play through the form. And I guess that Wallace being out maybe helps him a little bit, because it might give him a bit of extra midfield time. But yeah, I'd be hesitant to bring him in unseen.
Another reason to hold off on Dow for one more week at least is Western Bulldogs play Geelong, and you know Geelong can be hot and cold in terms of their form, but when Geelong is on, they've really stifled opposition scoring, especially Supercoach scoring. And I think, you know, you wouldn't want to bring Luke Dalhouse in only for Bulldogs to lose against Geelong, which is a potential possibility, and for him to score, you know, 60 still finding his feet. So I 100% agree with you, Mark. And the nice thing is, after they play Geelong, they only play one more top eight team, which is North, the following week, and they finish their run with Collingwood, Essendon, Frio. So the last 3 weeks are sort of when you'd want to have Luke Dalhouse anyway.
Yep, that makes sense, mate.
All right, next question here is from Joshua Gibbs. He's asking about Aaron Hall. If you've kept him for 1 week already, would you consider trading him this week? And Josh only has 3 trades left. He has Petrarca as cover, which could be a reason why he held on to Aaron in the first place. Thoughts on Aaron Hall, Mark?
I think that's a pretty good question, mate. And I think that goes probably back to my first advice, which is if you're under 4 trades, you should really just be trading for donuts from now. And Hall, the advantage is that it's only 2 weeks now, and you've got Petrarca, who has hit a bit of form in the last few weeks. So I'd be quite happy to play Petrarca at the moment over Hall and just wait. I guess the concern with Hall is that his form hasn't actually been very good since the start of the year. He's had sort of 1 or 2 good games. So even if when he comes back, he might not score all that great. But I think with limited trades, it's probably a hold.
Agree with that. If you had 5 trades left, which Richard Berry does, would you consider trading Hall out?
Well, I think if I had 5 trades left, I probably would have moved him last week. It's a tricky situation, like waiting on Dalhouse to drop a little bit, because Hall is actually only worth 433. But then Hall's only out for 1 more week, so whether that's going to be worth it is probably very borderline and probably not worth it. If I had 5 trades left, I'd probably almost go back to my league situation. If I was comfortable that I was going to make the top 4 going into next week, then I might just hold off a week and then reassess my options going into the finals, because I think just that flexibility of having 5 trades going into the last 4 weeks of finals is pretty helpful.
Yeah, agree with that. Richard is also asking whether or not we think it's more worthwhile trading out Daniel Rich or Marcus Adams in the backline instead. So if you had 5 trades left, would you consider trading out a subpar premium or a rookie still playing on field instead of trading out an injury type player like Aaron Hall?
I mean, I had Daniel Rich for most of the year, as everyone knows, and it was very frustrating. And one of the reasons why he gets tagged every week is exactly what we saw on the weekend against the Bombers, and that is he's actually a gun, and if you leave him alone, he will destroy you, and you need to put someone on him. And the sad part is that after the Bombers game and after every game where Daniel's played well, he gets a tag sent to him straight away because he's just too damaging. So I think Daniel's scores will be sliding for the rest of the year. I actually traded out Marcus Adams last week in my team for Buddy. At least 2 more weeks on the sidelines, and his scoring as well was pretty poor before he went off on his layoff. And again, like, he's going to have to come back and find some form. I'd definitely be keeping Rich ahead of Adams.
I'd agree with that. And I think that depending on your cover for Hall or for your injured players like Delidio or Hall, I would very much consider trading out, if I had 5 or more trades, trading out a subpar premium or a rookie left on field and waiting for Paul or Delidio to get back and playing Petrarca in the meantime. That's quite attractive, and it's something that you've done, Mark. Traded out your marginal players to premiums instead of dealing with the direct premium injury itself.
Yeah, Delidio being indefinite that to me says there's a very good chance he doesn't play again this year. What are Richmond playing for?
All right, we'll move on to some more general questions now. Next question is from Clinton Stott, or at Clint Stott 1 on Twitter. Would it be mad to trade Goldie to Martin? Even though Martin's absolutely killing it, and there's injury concerns over Goldie, that'd be crazy.
There is, and I think that they'll keep playing Dor, but as far as I can tell, Goldstein's asked to keep being played, and North are in a pretty desperate situation fighting for their place in the finals, so I think that they're going to have to keep playing him. And Martin, didn't he score like a 70 like 2 weeks ago? He just had a huge game on the weekend against a pretty terrible Essendon.
The only worry with Goldie is that they have a run of Western Bulldogs, Hawthorn, Sydney and GWS to round out the year. And Western Bulldogs, Hawthorn and Sydney in particular have not given up many ruck scores to opposition this year. So it is a little bit of a concern, but I think it's just too marginal a trade to pull off, and it does sound pretty mad, Mark.
Maybe if you've got 15 trades left, you've just got a couple extra. Yeah, no way. And look, it does bring me joy to see North Melbourne struggling like this, but I don't think I could make that trade.
We'll move on to general trade questions. Have visited this topic a few times, and we have already visited it this show, but a lot of the questions that we are getting at this time of year seems to be about people panicking about the number of trades they have left. So let's soothe some nerves, Mark. Luke Ryan asks how many trades we have going into finals. He has 3 and he's feeling nervous. How many do you have, Mark?
I have 3 trades left as well, mate. But he should be feeling nervous because 3 is definitely just that little bit too low. 3 is probably about standard for a team going for overall ranking. But I think you really want to be in the 4 or 5 range going into league finals if you can.
Yep, I have 4 and I am feeling nervous with 4. I think it's natural to feel nervous at this time of year, though. I wouldn't be freaking out if I had 3. 3 trades for 5 weeks, as long as things don't go too badly, it should be enough. And we have recommended going down to, you know, 3 trades with 5 weeks to go in the past, but we've been a bit more conservative this year.
We have, based on the last couple of years of carnage. And the reason why I'm probably nervous is not so much the 3 trades, it's the bench players that are missing at the moment. Like Trengrove not playing has sort of really messed with my plans. He was supposed to be a bit of a rock in the midfield for me.
All right, we'll move off the questions now and just go on to talking about some rookies. I don't think we need to delve into anyone too specifically because none of these rookies are on the bubble, but we'll just run through the list, Mark, and you can mention anything that comes to mind. Nathan Drummond, a backline player, 123,900. Joshua Schoenfield in the midfield, 117,000. Sam Minagola, midfield, 117,000. Jordan Foote, midfielder, 117,000. Shane Yaron, forward, 117,000. Did any of those players catch your eye over the weekend?
I guess the two that probably caught my eye were Josh Schoenfeld from the Suns. He looked really good in his first game, and I think Rockets already said that he'd really like him to play out the season and try and get some experience while so many of the other mids are injured. And the other one was probably Shane Yaron, who has unfortunately been either suspended or injured for most of this year. And he was someone that, if he was fit round one, probably a good chance he was actually in my starting team. So I think that they'll give him a chance. I think he's about 27, recruited as a mature age player. They obviously recruited him because they want an extra goal kicker and an avenue to goal, and it's not really a development pick, so I expect them to keep playing Shane Yaron.
Sam Menegola did score 97, but for anyone looking toward him, we obviously have quite a deep midfield. I think Lang is still out of the team, and Scooter Selwood played his first game a couple of weeks ago, so he'd definitely be under pressure for his spot. But he is a mature age recruit that has played for Hawthorn and Fremantle in the past, so if he somehow manages to hold on to his spot, he mightn't be an awful pick.
Yep.
We'll move on to the captain's corner, Mark, before we get to the final topic of the show, where we address the controversy that's going around or around this number one team. So we'll do the captain's corner, Mark. Have you had a little bit of a think about who you might go with this week?
Pretty tricky week, mate. Not a lot of obvious options. I think that my preference is always danger with the VC, and probably no reason not to do that again this week. I guess that you could potentially go Selwood as a VC as well. They both seem to have a pretty big upside. And then I'm just looking for a captain for the rest of the games. And I know Pritis is pretty reliable, but they're playing in Melbourne. Rocky against the Power, like, who does their tagger go to? And they have been playing a tagger for the last few weeks. So good chance that might be Rocky. That probably just makes me a little bit wary there, even though he's probably still a good pick. So I think that Sloan against the Bombers, even though he'll get tagged, is probably a really good pick. And Pendles at the MCG, he's probably my most likely, just because he's a very safe sort of pick.
I'm also very much looking at Dangerfield for the VC. The other guys I'm considering are Robbie Gray as well against Brisbane. Could be a decent pick. He's been in reasonably consistent form as well. And Max Gawn as well. He's been scoring quite well, and they've come up against the Gold Coast Suns this week. And so he might get the fairly decent scoring against their ruck division there.
Yeah, interesting that a lot of those guys that you mentioned are probably better vice-captain choices than they are captain choices, which is why I'd probably end up going back to Pendlebury.
Yeah. Where I'd be sitting at the moment is also Dangerfield, vice-captain, and Pendlebury captain as well. But it'll probably depend on how my team goes this week to determine my risk appetite. If my team's going shit, I'll probably take a bit more risk on my captain if Dangerfield doesn't work out.
That may have been why I took a risk on Rocky last week instead of just banking Danger's score.
Worked out very well last week, mate. All right, so last topic for this week is the chatter over the Supercoach leader, Mark. So Paul Maltman mentioned on Facebook that the guy who's leading Supercoach is running at least three teams, a clear breach of the rules. Why hasn't he been DQ'd yet? And we got some questions on Twitter, including this one from Blackie_White. Should virtual sports allow players to enter more than one team in Supercoach? Do you want to give our listeners a little bit of a rundown about the hoo-ha for those that aren't aware of what goes on Twitter, Mark?
Yeah, if you do fantasy football, you should probably get Twitter. It's one thing that's really good for. And it's probably normally good, because one thing that Twitter is bad for is there's a lot of trolling, but there's probably not a heap of that in the fantasy footy community, which is good. But apparently the number one ranked team at the moment, who's been number one or top five for a little while now, someone called him out and said he has three teams, and one of them's ranked 9,000 and one of them's ranked 30,000, and the other obviously number one. Now, he is affiliated with, they've got their SCT labels on his team, so he's affiliated with a group out there. Someone has called him out on it. He's made his account on Twitter private. And unfortunately, I didn't actually see this part, but unfortunately, someone has gotten racially abusive towards him and been pretty strong on that, which is obviously like totally unacceptable. And that really is the bad side of Twitter coming out and being brought into the fantasy footy community. And so he's been called out, and Supercoach Talk, who is associated with, they've just been backing their man, and they've said that it's all been sorted, and Supercoach has said that it's totally fine. But from what I can see, that is not the case. Al Payton, who has been a good friend of the show over the years, has tweeted out tonight saying that there's a bit of drama associated with the number one team, and that the powers that be are investigating. Now, that clearly says in the terms and conditions that you can only have one team. So I think there was a team earlier in the year where I think the team was like called Round 13, and there was a guy that had a team created just for the Round 13 buys.
Genius.
And he actually won the week that week, so he did a good job of creating it. But unfortunately, like, that was obviously a multiple team, so it was pretty obvious, and they investigated that. And they actually paid out numbers to the team who came second that week. So there's already history this season of what the powers that be will decide in this sort of situation. So I guess I'm not sure what they do decide. Do they decide that his team gets deleted? Do they decide that he's just ineligible for prizes and won't show up in the leaderboards? I'm not totally sure. I think that probably second option is probably the better way of going about it. You keep his team so he can stay in his leagues and he can still fight for whatever's going on for them. And he's obviously like pretty keen on Supercoach, so let him continue to have his fun. But I think that having multiple teams when it clearly says that you're not allowed in the terms and conditions probably does disqualify you from the number one ranking. And the $50,000 prize money, and seeing as it's been called out so publicly, I don't think that the powers that be really have any other way around it. What do you reckon?
First up, terrible that stuff was said. Shouldn't detract from the fact that we should be talking about the issue. This guy's got multiple teams. I think the guy at second at the moment, who we've talked about a couple of times because he's in the Supercoach Coach League, Lewis's Talk in Flags, posted something nice, and he said, you know, the guy should still be allowed to play and still be allowed to win the 50,000 even. I think that's being generous. Supercoach is a game of luck. We talk about that a lot, Mark. The more chances you have, the more unique shots you can take at your premiums, the way better chance you have of winning the competition. So, yeah, I don't think the bloke should be allowed to win it. I think it would kind of spoil the integrity of the competition if we went to a place where it was acceptable to have five teams each all going for the overall prize.
The leader he's not done anything that's like really morally reprehensible or anything. And he's obviously very, very good at Supercoach, and he does deserve props for that. But still, like, there are rules that you have to abide by, and if you do break those rules, then you do make yourself ineligible for the prize. So I don't think it's unreasonable to do that, but I don't think that we should be hating on this guy either.
I don't spend too much time on Twitter, but it sounds like the vitriol he's getting has been fairly heavy.
Obviously way over the top from some people, and it's not like he's a bad person.
That's right.
If you look at Twitter conversations, some of them are completely awful, and because of the anonymity, people are just not very nice to each other.
Well, I think we've spent more time than we'd like to discussing this, Mark. So we'll wrap up this week's show then. Don't forget, you can hit us up on Facebook and on Twitter to ask us your questions via social media, and patreon.com/supercoachcoach if you are looking to help out with the running costs of the show. Our Patreons out there are a big reason why we're able to do this each week. Massive thanks. And we're also releasing a Patreon exclusive season review for anyone interested in that. Head over to patreon.com/supercoachcoach.
I really need some new podcasting equipment. Please support us.
Anything else to leave our listeners with, Mark?
Last week I went into the weekend hoping the Bombers would win, that I'd win both of my draft finals and I'd do well in Supercoach. Well, I did okay in Supercoach. The Bombers got pumped. It was awful. It was so terrible being in that game. And I only won one of my draft leagues. So I have a big prelim against my nemesis. His name's Moosey. And hopefully next week I will be rather cocky and coming off a victory.
I am just hoping to make back some ground that I lost to you, Mark. I'd like you to stay around the 500 mark, but I'd like to get back up there. Top 500 mark is my aim for the year, and I have 5 weeks to make sure that that's a reality and 4 trades left to do it with.
Good luck, mate.
To our listeners, good luck to you as well, and we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya.